What leads people to be skeptical of the return of Jesus to this earth? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author throughout this quarter, and we're continuing a 13-week series on the books of 1st and 2nd Peter in the New Testament. My conversation partners are Dr. Alden Thompson and Dr. Jody Washburn. Both are professors of Old Testament at Walla Walla University. If there is any doctrine of the New Testament or major teaching, perhaps outside that of the resurrection or maybe the virgin birth, that is often questioned, it's this idea that Jesus will come back to this earth again. And I think it's tied to the idea of resurrection. How could he come back if he wasn't resurrected from the dead in the first place? But what do you think leads people to be skeptical? Is it that issue of resurrection? Is it perhaps they are not aware of the historicity of that first event?
Or is it just a long history? I think of my own family. You know, I come from a generation after generation after generation of people who have believed Jesus would come in our lifetime.
And where is he?
And there are moments when, you know, one of us, either my dad, my grandfather, myself, we have to ponder and say, okay, what do we do with that? What do we do with the fact that great-grandmother believed this too, and yet she passed away in hope of Jesus? I think that that's not necessarily strong evidence to not believe, I guess, or to be skeptical of. Because if you think of the long history of the Old Testament, they continually cling to the fact that God delivered them from Egypt. That Exodus, that delivery, redemption from slavery is repeatedly brought up as strong evidence that God would deliver them again. Right? And this leads to the hope of the Messiah. But I wonder sometimes if our, you know, skepticism, which seems so convincing in the moment, may not have as much basis, perhaps.
Maybe because we envision time differently. For Israel, it was over 1,000 years between the time of the Exodus and the time that Jesus arrived to be the second Moses, right? To
yeah, a ultimately long period deliver. Of waiting, of hoping, of basing hope in that previous experience.
My guess is that a key factor in the loss of faith and the return of Jesus is the unchristian behavior, unchristian lifestyle of those who claim to believe in his return. Mm-hmm. You have this mismatch between those who are looking for his return and the kind of lives they lead.
It's almost like a free ticket.
Yeah.
How hard then is it, Alden, when you think about that difference between lifestyle and profession? How hard is it in today's world to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and looking for the hope of his return in such a way that it meshes with how we act? And it really, in 2 Peter chapter 3, this is the big question, isn't it? Because he says, look, there are all these scoffers have come and said, oh, where is this coming? You know, you say Jesus was going to come back, but it hasn't happened in your lifetime, Peter, and now it may not happen in the next generation, and here we are, almost 2,000 years later, saying it still hasn't happened.
But there's an interesting point that Peter makes. He says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything done in it will be laid bare. Now, it sounds to me like a thief is a surprise.
Certainly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got to be ready for it. You don't know when it's going to come. But constant preparedness is, I think, the only solution.
Now, if Jesus doesn't come in my lifetime, or I don't think he's going to come in my lifetime, does that mean that I don't need to make preparation? Or is there an event in my life that could bring the coming of Jesus much nearer in terms of the preparation I need to make? I'm thinking of my death. At what point do I say, you know, if I were to die tonight, while walking home, I was struck by a vehicle and were killed. Today would be the last day I have to make preparation to see Jesus, to say those final words to those I love, to encourage those that I care about to join me in eternity. Today's the last day I have. And Alden, like you said, to make my behavior correspond with my profession mm-hmm. of godliness and wanting to follow Christ. If I'm going to die today, why should I put off that preparation? Should I still, am I really waiting for the second coming of Jesus, or am I waiting for his death? Or are there some who will not taste death? Are there some for whom death will not be an experience? They will be alive to see Jesus return.
Well, there are suggestions in the New Testament that that final generation will be there, but we don't know when that's going to be.
Or who will be part of it.
Sure, yeah.
Now, would you like to be part of it if it were up to you? Would you like to be part of such a group?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, to go through the difficulties of the end time in order to reach there doesn't sound like very much fun to me. Although, when I look at the New Testament, there are two different approaches. There's one approach that says that things are going to be getting better, are going to get worse and worse and worse, and then the Lord will come. But there's another presentation that says things will continue exactly as they were.
And people will say peace and safety, and then sudden destruction comes
on
them.
That's right. And if I were the devil, I would certainly lull people to sleep so we could catch as many of them, see? So, in fact, there's this very curious quotation. I think it's terribly true from C.S. Lewis. He's in Screwtape Letters, so you have to read it backwards. But he says, Screwtape talking to young Wormwood, who is his nephew and the understudy of the devil, says, like all young tempters, you are anxious to be able to report spectacular wickedness. But do remember the only thing that matters is the extent to which you separate the man from the enemy. It does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge the person away from the light out into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards if cards can do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts.
I'm amazed both by the context in which you bring that up and the fact that you had that entirely memorized, Alden. But the truth of it is that sin is anything that leads me from God,
yeah.
And it doesn't have to be the big sins. In fact, how many Christians, supposed Christians, might be surprised to find they're not anxious to see Jesus?
And one of the dangers of making a rule list is that by listing the rules, you may list the principles, and so you keep the rules, but you miss the principle entirely.
And isn't that exactly what Jesus struggled with against the Pharisees when he says that you have tithed your mint and dill and cumin, but you have neglected the weightier issues of the law, justice, mercy, peace, love? You know, when we think about the second coming, I'm anxious for Jesus to return because when I look at who he was in the New Testament Gospels, I long to have such a relationship like Jesus had face-to-face with his disciples and to see what effect Jesus could have on a world that's so filled with hurt like ours is today. But then I look at the timing that Peter talks about here and he says, why are you all so impatient? You're looking for this coming of the Lord. Don't think that God's timing is the same as yours.
He appeals to God's patience, you see. So it's God's not anxious to get this thing included because people will be lost. So, and my guess is if we look at our family and friends, if a little more time would allow them to see the light, by all means, Lord,
take the time.
Give them more time. Yeah.
Yeah, if God is that patient with us and he's longing for not one to turn away, he doesn't want any to be lost. And I like the way it says it that he is long-suffering towards us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. That word long-suffering, you two are Old Testament scholars, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard from one of my professors at Andrews that that word long-suffering shows up in the Old Testament in kind of a unique idiom. Two long noses, that God has two long noses, that God is... He's slow to anger, and we think, well, how does the Hebrew idiom two long noses? Is it true that God is described as the God of two long noses, that we have a nose, and that's the seat of anger, where we get mad or angry, but a long nose means you're slow to anger. But if you have two long noses, you're superhuman, and it takes you a long time to get mad. That was such a picturesque way of describing it. I did a search in the Old Testament Hebrew and came up with, I think, about five or six different occasions where that two long noses phrase comes up. It's never translated that way into English, but it was so picturesque to me. God is long-suffering. am I slow to anger like God? I don't think I am.
You know, that reminds me, long-suffering. I had a German friend say there's a word in English which we don't have in German, and it's the word long-suffering. Just like the Germans have a word for longing, with reference to the second coming, that we don't have in English. Oh. It's Sehnsucht. Mm-hmm. It's longing with about a dozen O's in there. See? And so it is difficult to get the same ideas across in different languages, but we have to work the same. But it's quite clear here that God doesn't want anybody to perish.
But this idea of long-suffering, this suggests that God is in this interim period, that he is suffering with us. Mm-hmm. Is that, would you say that's true?
Sure.
That's Emmanuel, God with us, illustrated by Jesus. I think it's so central to the picture of God painted in the Bible.
That God actually enters into the suffering of his people.
Yes.
He is not immune to suffering because he actually engages in it with us.
Yes.
Jesus crying for his people and in the process waiting. This section on the day of the Lord will come, Alden, you pointed out, like a thief. Then it talks about the elements passing away with a great noise. The elements will melt with fervent heat. But then he says, therefore, and here's maybe the conclusion of this whole section, what sort of people ought you to be? And what manner of persons ought we to be like in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God? What sort of people ought we to be? He's really asking the question, if the heavens and the earth are going to be destroyed, should we not be, I think the inherent question, moral beings? Ought not to live godly, righteously now?
Well, that's what he says. You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God. And he says, you ought to speed its coming.
How can I speed it?
That's a good question, because if God's in charge of everything, it ought to be impossible.
Sure.
But he's not afraid to put things into the hands of humans.
That's true.
And if we saw up above that he's waiting for all to come to repentance, then maybe the first work I can do to hasten his coming is to make sure that I've repented.
Yeah.
Right? I can make sure that my personal life is right with God.
It's like they say in the airlines, you know, make sure your own mask is fixed on first, then you help the others.
Then you could help someone else.
If you think of sin as a separation from God, I mean, you know, in the garden, people fled away after sin entered. And I think the hope that's being painted here is that when Jesus comes back, not only will he be happy to see us, but we're going to be happy to see him.
And how exciting that day will be when we actually get to see Christ. The passages of the Bible that talk about the coming of Jesus, Peter says that many people have twisted, just like they also do with the writings of Paul. He says our friend Paul, our brother Paul, many people twist his writings as well because he says things that are hard to understand. But ultimately, the scriptures are there to teach us about Jesus and his coming. We've come to the end of the book of 2 Peter. Next week, we'll look at some major themes in the book throughout 1 and 2 Peter. I want to say thank you to my colleagues for your conversation. My thanks to Jared Miller, our program engineer, and to all of you who are listening in. We appreciate your time, and for the Good Word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.